Speaking of dad.
Okay, so here's the... We both sort of had the same problem about the end of Larry Wilmore.
Another one they shot down. Another one of us they shot down.
Yeah, and I loved his quote. It's like when he was doing the unblackening, his political coverage of the last of Obama's administration.
Let's see what's happening with the unblackening.
He said, I didn't expect to be part of the unblackening personally. So I said,
was good. Yeah, I think it's just plain bullshit that they said it was about ratings.
Well, but it's the ratings from whom? That's part of the issue is that they keep looking at the same old metrics that they've always looked at. You know, they want to make money off the show, okay? But it's a basic cable show, so you're never going to have the same audience you have for a network show.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to have the production budget to do some of the stuff that a Jimmy Kimmel or a Jimmy Fallon can do. They don't have that kind of budget, so they can't do some of the things. And also, somebody mentioned that Larry Wilmore is... an older black man with that really sort of dry, cool sense of humor. It's like if you don't get the jokes, he's not obvious about it. He doesn't jump up and down.
No, but he's an intelligent comic.
But but most real good comics have that intelligence that you can see through, even depending on the era. I mean, if you listen to Richard Pryor's stuff, there's such an intelligence there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he did the, in his era, you know, he played the black characters and he used a lot of cuss words, but it was always in character.
It was in character.
And when you cut through it, it was still very funny.
Right.
And he could also do comedy on network television without cursing, without slipping into some of the characters, and still be funny as hell.
And when they asked him, when they wanted him to go even further, he was like, no, I'm not playing a buffoon.
Right. So Wilmore, to me, was... he had paid his dues.
Absolutely.
You know, he had done... And I don't understand sometimes with big media companies... When other people can see it coming and try to explain to them, this is not what you're never going to have the millions of people who used to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're going to give this guy a year and a half to prove himself when Steve Colbert spent like 5 years on The Daily Show, making a name for himself and building his character, and then he gets his own show, and it stays on forever. So you never give... They just don't give black people a chance. Or my feeling is with Dave Chappelle. Everybody loved Dave Chappelle, and they were throwing gobs of money at Chappelle because he was making them lots of money at that time. But he wasn't interested in it. And I don't think it's sort of slipping into, we've talked about it, white privilege, where they can't see that, like a Larry Wilmore, they see it as a niche audience. It's not, but it was 700,000 people a night watching that show.
That's a lot of people.
That's a lot of people. Now the question is, which advertisers do you go after?
My question is, if he was that important, are any of the black networks going to pick him up? And I say no. They're not going to, because they are so conservative.
Well, I don't know. Somebody mentioned, because I don't watch it, but they're saying TV One might pick it up because they're trying to build a brand, that they're coming up with some stuff. I haven't watched it, so I can't comment. The only thing I know...
I'll believe that when it goes on air. Okay. I think he should just do his own YouTube channel. Produce his own show.
But here's the thing that everybody seems to forget. He left Black-ish. He was the executive producer of Black-ish. He left Black-ish from ABC to go over to do his own show on Comedy Central. So in a sense, I don't know if he took a pay cut, but he sure took a cut from going to a hit network show, which it is, to doing his own comedy show the way he wanted to do it. And now, but he's also the co-creator or co-writer and producer of Issa Rae's new show on HBO.
Oh, is it?
So,
okay.
Yeah, so the dude, I mean,
he's working. He's been working since the 70s.
He's creative.
He ain't hurting, at least for...
But also, he was starting to... He was bringing along these... Try your tricks. Comics of color.
Yes.
Who were, yeah.
Thanks.
There were all of these people who, and it was a multiplicity of different kinds of comics.
Yes, there was.
That, you know.
I loved all of them.
Yeah. And so, and it let them do, let them be, I mean, Grace Parr, when she would do Nightly.
Oh, my God.
I was on the floor. I was on the floor. Because it was a perfect parody of all of those entertainment shows that do nothing but celebrity gossip. And it's like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
Oh, this is, you know, one of my favorite podcasts is The Black Guy Who Tips.
Right.
And it's a very funny show and anybody should listen to it. But they have this new segment in the middle of all the, you know, stuff, all the really heavy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Calls it his palate cleanser.
Mm.
And it's white people news. And it's mostly things like, oh, Taylor Swift went on a cruise.
Oh, I got some. I read she was on jury duty, and, you know, not a lot of hair and makeup, but no entourage.
Yeah.
So just like a regular person.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
So I just, but that's the kind of stuff that I think they, nobody wants to talk about anything serious, and if they do want to talk about it serious, it's in such a privileged manner. Again, sort of things that have been coming up. I'm not a big, huge sports follower, but the quarterback of the 49ers,
right.
Colin
Kaepernick,
whatever. But, I mean, okay, so the guy does a protest. He sits down at the national anthem. People lost their shit.
I think that's a bunch of crap.
Well, but I don't understand.
I mean, were there all white people who lost their shit?
They were all going, and then they went and interviewed other quarterbacks, and they were, this is the wrong kind of protest. Well, what is the right kind of protest? They're saying people died for that flag. No, they didn't die, but they died for what that flag represents. That you have the right in this country to sit your black butt down.
And protest.
And protest.
You have the right to peaceful protest.
Yes.
And I think that it's what I think they should be angry about is those corporations who are sending their jobs out of the country. This brother who's sitting down ain't your problem.
Right.
Those corporations that you are defending.
Yeah, right. And what got me is they're people saying, like, you got a contract worth $105 million. You need not to make a stink. You know, think of all the money you got. It's like,
It ain't about the money.
And even if it was, so what?
I could take my $105 million and run.
Yeah.
Thank you. Bye.
And, you know, even if I don't, if I've been smart enough over the years that I've played professional football to put some of that money away, because he makes like $10 million a year. So it's like, okay, what else have you done with your money? If you put it into real estate, or you stuck it in a bank, or you got your good portfolio advisor, $10 million is going to last you for a long time. So you got a chance to do whatever the hell you want.
Well, I can tell you honestly, ever since I was a kid, I never liked standing for the national anthem. I never like reciting the Pledge of Allegiance.
Okay.
Mainly for because of that one line, "One Nation Under God." I'm like, it shouldn't be in there. That's unconstitutional.
Well, okay. Now, see,
whose God are they talking about? We knew what God they were talking about.
But this is a generational difference, and since I assisted in your raising, I have to say, okay, I'm not complaining. But you also have to remember that I grew up in an era when, you know, I actually did go in the Army. And mm-hmm. I came close to going out there and getting my ass shot off.
Did.
So it wasn't like that didn't mean anything. And it was also, I grew up during the Civil Rights Movement, where black folks were getting lynched. And it's standing up for what you believe in. Or in this case, again, once more, sitting down, doing sittings.
Mm-hmm.
And just watching all that stuff happen and still thinking that this is America, this is the ideal of America. I know it's not the actual, not the reality. So for me, standing for the flag has a different connotation than most of those people are talking about. Because I really did believe that if you wanted to sit down, you could. I wasn't going to say anything.
Right. Well, that's a big difference. Then we're in agreement on that.
Yeah, I know.
So
if
you want to sit down, sit down.
Yeah.
This is America. You are allowed to do that. And
right.
That's why I love it. And that's why I can take advantage of not wanting to stand up or not putting my hand over my heart or not reciting it. Because, and I do believe in the ideals of America.
I firmly
believe that, and that's why I can do that. I can stand on the street and go, this government's bullshit, and not get killed.
Right. And having traveled, both of us, mm-hmm. where you get to other parts of the world where you see that kind of shit will get you killed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it'll get you killed right then and there.
Right there.
And nobody
in
will
front
say
of everybody.
Any. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And they will leave your body there for days to say, anyone else got something to say?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's, I that sort of had to, it just upset me once again of people of privilege. And, you know, I keep saying privilege because, you know, it is about white people mostly, but there's some black folks.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I've watched some YouTube videos of some brothers who were getting down on Kaepernick, not because of his black stance, but because he was half black. He wasn't black enough.
Goodness.
I'm like, what the?
Yeah, really? Really?
What? This is America, dude.
So we're all to blame here.
Yeah.
Black enough.
But that was it. It was like, you know, now he just learned, you know, he grew up with a white family, and you know, now I'm like, some of the most radical people I've ever met in my life were people who were raised in, black people who were raised in privilege, came back to this country, and someone said, what the?
Or people, we were down in Jamaica last week, and then we went on one of these little touristy trips to Ocho Rios, to the falls, Dunge Rivers Falls.
Yes,
so they, on a little bus, they have this, on the way back, they have this Bob Marley documentary that they play.
Okay.
And so, and I remember seeing it, so I was kind of half asleep, you know, everyone was passing out after that day. So I'm half watching it, and we were talking about it later on, and somebody said they didn't realize, or they never knew that Bob Marley was half white. I was like, wow. I was like, yeah, never knew his father was a white man. Left his mom. General took off. Yeah, yes, Bob Marley, this revolutionary, is half white.
Yeah.
But he's black enough.
Yeah,
right. So if you grow up poor and you get out of it and struggle, that's the only way to be black.
Well, it was funny.
Know, that's the only path.
Yeah.
That's the path to blackness. That's a book.
Okay. Or maybe that's a new podcast. The path of blackness.
Path to blackness.
But I mean, also on that same tone, thinking about what blackness is or is not. There were some people, you know, I saw one of those YouTubes where they put up Kaepernick when he was like in college and clean shaven, and now he's got a beard and you know he's got his hair, he's got it locked, and I mean he said he's got tattoos and you know they said well see if he shaved and stayed out of the sun, you couldn't tell if he was black enough. Like, damn. What is with these people?
It's self-hate. It's self-hate, which brings me to another issue about, not, we were talking about white privilege. It's basically about, the sister McGee.
Oh, Heather McGee.
Heather McGee, where she, and you said, why did she have to explain that to that guy? Well, totally agree with that.
Okay, for those who are not aware of this, you should Google Heather McGee on C-SPAN. She is the head of Demos Action, which is a nonprofit that works for social justice. But she was on C-SPAN Journal, or Washington Journal, and some white guy called in and legitimately said, I'm white and I'm prejudiced and I want to know what I can do about it. And she gave
He was sincere.
Yeah. And she also gave a very sincere and thoughtful answer. And I was impressed with the answer, and I was cheering her off, and it did a lot of... But I was also thinking, why did she have to explain to him? Mm-hmm. So I was both in admiration of her calmness and her demeanor. And once again, it's a black woman has to explain stuff.
Uh-huh.
You know?
What do you call it? We got a white-splain?
Hmm? We have to white explain.
She had a white explain. That's and that actually triggered a thought. I think it's kind of been simmering up in me that we in our art, we try in media or music, we try to change the perception of us for white people. We try to represent us positively, intelligently, insightfully, but now I'm shifting that to think, you know, I need to really inspire us. Not, I don't care about what they think anymore.
Right.
Because we have so much self-hate.
Okay.
So how do we, no one's going to respect us or take us seriously if we don't take ourselves seriously. First.
Okay, well, I'm going to push back a little bit. Okay. I don't think it's as much self-hate is that we have been bombarded with so much negative images of us. I'm a whole generation beyond you, and I'm hearing the same kind of crap that I've been fighting against all my life, learning stuff that I didn't, that nobody taught me when I was coming up in school, didn't mention crucial details. And it wasn't that I hated being black. I was tired of fighting against white oppression.
Yes, yes, that's it.
You know,
that's a good
way of putting it. And you never learn stuff. And it just to bug the heck out of me. I remember, you know, I'm a voracious reader. Read all the time, and when you were growing up, I would not buy you a toy, but I would always buy you a book.
Yes. I do remember that. I could always set up there for a book.
Yes.
I'm glad I liked them.
But I remember reading Three Musketeers, The Count of Monte Cristo, and all of the Dumas. I was 19 years old before I found out that they were black. I'm like, so this is considered great literature that everybody's praising the Dumas, and you know that the father and son were these great writers, these great French writers, and everybody should read them. And I read them, and I loved them. And I'm thinking, so how come you left out the fact that they were black? And so then I had to start digging in to find out what else was left out. So it wasn't so much that I had the self-hate, it's that I didn't know any better.
Sure, no, that's certainly part of it. That's certainly part of it, because like you said, we are bombarded by media every day of negative images of ourselves. But I think we're also taught that we have to convince them that we are okay.
Yes, I agree with that.
I think we need to shift that. We need to convince ourselves we are okay. As a group, as a whole, as a community.
Okay.
I don't believe we feel that.
Okay, I don't know. See, I think that we have.
And because of those images, we are just as prejudiced against ourselves. You can't help not to be.
I know.
If that's all we're projected.
Yeah, but there was enough stuff like in my family. And our family, you know, if you look at your aunts and uncles, my brothers and sisters, and your cousins on my side of the family, and on your mother's side too, these are all good people.
Oh, sure.
These are all people, smart, well-educated.
Oh, absolutely.
Did family stuff. They're not any of the images. And we grew up around all that stuff. But we still managed to come out of it.
Absolutely.
If not whole, at least not as damaged as we should have been. Maybe that's what I'm trying to say.
True. I mean, we're definitely resilient.
Okay.
Mike Yard, he was saying on Larry Wilmore, they were talking about if Trump got elected, he goes, man, we got through slavery, we're just going to ride this out.
which obviously leads on to Trump, and it took me a while to stop being so angry at what's going on with Trump and his. And I just like, and for some reason, I don't know how it came up, somebody mentioned Def Comedy Jam, and I thought, Donald Trump is tone deaf. So it's a tone deaf comedy jam.
Tone deaf comedy jam.
And so he says stuff that makes no sense.
No.
And it's like saying to black people, what you got to lose?
Yep, right.
I'm like, what?
And this goes back to, and I said this to somebody recently, that this is the only election, this election goes back to every other election, except for the last two, when I voted for Obama.
Right.
That I'm just simply voting for the lesser of two evils.
Yes.
Simply, who is going to fuck us less?
Right.
That's it. That's the way it's been.
Okay. And I mean, I was like, who's going to fuck us? Like, at least Hillary will give some lubrication.
That's exactly. A little bit, you know? She's a good little bit. We'll be like, okay, fine. Just hurry up.
I'm going to grease you up.
Yeah.
But here's the other thing about the about Hillary, which I mean, I always knew what we got with Hillary. So it was never one of these. I wasn't a big supporter. I wasn't a big anti-Hillary. I know what Hillary is, and it's not.
She's a typical politician.
She's fine. I can deal with that. But also, the other thing that bugs me about her is I almost have to embrace her in the sisterhood because they've been lying about her for 25 years. And then everybody's like, why is she so untrustworthy?
Well, y'all keep lying about her.
You know? Yeah. I know it's politics, but it's worse than that. It's because she dared to be not just a first lady. She was going to be a policymaker.
Right.
Oh my God, you can't do that.
Right.
You know? You can't do health care. So it's like, I'm certainly not an apologist for Hillary and Bill. They did some messed up stuff.
Oh, they had screwed us up pretty bad.
But there's also, I look at all the rest of the stuff that's going on, and I'm going like, wait a minute. You know, it is the lesser of two evils, but I'm sort of like, One's lesser.
That's what I'm saying.
One's really lesser.
Yeah. You know. The other one's just crazy.
Yeah. And what is it? I'm trying to get somebody to explain. What is it about Trump's craziness that people keep excusing it? Well, yeah, he says he's going to build a wall and, you know, he's going to kick out all the Muslims. But, you know, when he gets to be president, he'll be okay.
No.
So, yeah, it really bothers me that he says these kinds of things. But I'm still going to vote for him. It's like, what?
Doesn't work like that.
You know?
Doesn't work. I'm not going to suck while I'm trying to get to the, you know, I'm going to play basketball really bad, and now I'm going to wait till I get to the NBA to start really playing.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. If I get to the NBA.
No, I mean, but going his path, that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, you all know I suck, but you're going to let me through.
Yeah.
Because you know, once I get the NBA, I'm going to tear your shit up. It doesn't work that way.
No.
If you suck, you get off the court.
Right.
Plain and simple.
Yeah.
Sit your ass down. Go practice, and when you're good enough, you can come back on this court.
No, I don't think he's. I mean, this is one of those real cases where we can take the cliche the other way.
No.
White boy can't jump.
No. No, cannot.
Can't execute a 3-point play. Doesn't know how to pass the ball.
No.
It's like,
standing in the middle of the court just throwing shit. Somebody put this in the net for me.